This life went on for about a fortnight, with a slight increase of work as more customers came to the restaurant. I could have saved an hour a day by taking a room near the restaurant, but it seemed impossible to find time to change lodgings, or for that matter to get my hair cut, look at a newspaper, or even undress completely. After 10 days I managed to find a free quarter of an hour, and wrote to my friend B in London, asking him if he could get me a job of some sort, anything, so long as it allowed more than 5 hours sleep. I was simply not equal to going on with a 17-hour day, though there are plenty of people who think nothing of it. When one is overworked, it is a good cure for self-pity to think of the thousands of people in Paris restaurants who work such hours and will go on doing it, not for a few weeks, but for years. There was a girl in a bistro near my hotel who worked from 7 in the morning till midnight for a whole year, only sitting down to her meals. I remember once asking her to come to a dance, and she laughed and said that she had not been further than the street corner for several months. She was consumptive and died about the time I left Paris. After only a week, we were all neurasthenic with fatigue, except Jules, who skulked persistently. The quarrels, intermittent at first, had now become continuous. For hours one would keep up a drizzle of useless nagging, rising into storms of abuse every few minutes. "Get me down that saucepan, idiot," the cook would cry. She was not tall enough to reach the shelves where the saucepans were kept. "Get it down yourself, you old whore," I would answer. Such remarks seemed to be generated spontaneously from the air of the kitchen. We quarrelled over things of inconceivable pettiness. The dustbin, for instance, was an unending source of quarrels, whether it should be put where I wanted it, which was in the cook's way, or where she wanted it, which was between me and the sink. Once she nagged and nagged until at last, in pure spite, I lifted the dustbin up and put it out in the middle of the floor, where she was bound to trip over it. "Now, you cow," I said, "move it yourself." Poor old woman, it was too heavy for her to lift, and she sat down, put her head on the table, and burst out crying, and I jeered at her. This is the kind of effect that fatigue has upon one's manners. After a few days, the cook had ceased talking about Tolstoy and her artistic nature, and she and I were not on speaking terms except for the purposes of work, and Boris and Jules were not on speaking terms, and neither of them was on speaking terms with the cook. Even Boris and I were barely on speaking terms. We had agreed beforehand that the engueulade of working hours did not count between times, but we had called each other things too bad to be forgotten, and besides, there were no between times. Jules grew lazier and lazier, and he stole food constantly from a sense of duty, he said. He called the rest of us jeune, blackleg, when we would not join him in stealing. He had a curious, malignant spirit. He told me, as a matter of pride, that he had sometimes wrung a dirty dishcloth into a customer's soup before taking it in, just to be revenged upon a member of the bourgeoisie. The kitchen grew dirtier, and the rats bolder, though we trapped a few of them. Looking round that filthy room, with raw meat lying among the refuse on the floor, and cold, clotted saucepans sprawling everywhere, and the sink blocked and coated with grease, I used to wonder whether there could be a restaurant in the world as bad as ours. But the other three all said that they'd been in dirtier places. Jules took a positive pleasure in seeing things dirty. In the afternoon, when he had not much to do, he used to stand in the kitchen doorway jeering at us for working too hard. "Fool! Why do you wash that plate? Wipe it on your trousers. Who cares about the customers? They don't know what's going on. What is restaurant work? You are carving a chicken and it falls on the floor. You apologize, you bow, you go out, and in 5 minutes you come back by another door with the same chicken. That is restaurant work," etc. And strange to say, in spite of all this filth and incompetence, the Auberge de Jean Cottard was actually a success. For the first few days, all our customers were Russians, friends of the patron, and these were followed by Americans and other foreigners, no Frenchmen. Then one night, there was tremendous excitement because our first Frenchman had arrived. For a moment, our quarrels were forgotten, and we all united in the effort to serve a good dinner. Boris tiptoed into the kitchen, jerked his thumb over his shoulder, and whispered conspiratorially, "Shh! Attention! Un français!" A moment later, the patron's wife came and whispered, "Attention! Un français! See that he gets a double portion of all vegetables." While the Frenchman ate, the patron's wife stood behind the grill of the kitchen door and watched the expression of his face. Next night, the Frenchman came back with two other Frenchmen. This meant that we were earning a good name. The surest sign of a bad restaurant is to be frequented only by foreigners. Probably part of the reason for our success was that the patron, with the sole gleam of sense he had shown in fitting out the restaurant, had bought very sharp table knives. Sharp knives, of course, are the secret of a successful restaurant. I am glad that this happened, for it destroyed one of my illusions, namely, the idea that Frenchmen know good food when they see it. Or perhaps we were a fairly good restaurant by Paris standards, in which case the bad ones must be past imagining. In a very few days after I had written to B, he replied to say that there was a job he could get for me. It was to look after a congenital imbecile, which sounded a splendid rest cure after the Auberge de Jean Cottard. I pictured myself loafing in the country lanes, knocking thistle heads off with my stick, feeding on roast lamb and treacle tart, and sleeping 10 hours a night in sheets smelling of lavender. B sent me a fiver to pay my passage and get my clothes out of pawn, and as soon as the money arrived I gave one day's notice and left the restaurant. My leaving so suddenly embarrassed the patron, for as usual he was penniless, and he had to pay my wages 30 francs short. However, he stood me a glass of Courvoisier 48 brandy, and I think he felt that this made up the difference. They engaged a Czech, a thoroughly competent plongeur, in my place, and the poor old cook was sacked a few weeks later. Afterwards, I heard that, with two first-rate people in the kitchen, the plongeur's work had been cut down to 15 hours a day. Below that, no one could have cut it, short of modernizing the kitchen.